Welcome to Skills Journey, hosted by Emil Rovenheimer and Yanni Brofenboer from PopUp, the People Upliftment Program. This is your passport to a transformative journey where we uncover the power of skills together.
Welcome to Skills Journey with me, Emil Rovenheimer, and Yanni Brofenboer from PopUp. It's our privilege to chat to people about their skills journey. And so we're really excited to introduce this second season of Skills Journey. We have come from a whole discussion on mastery and meta skills, but for this season, we want to explore skills journeys of masters. And we call this next season Masterclass. And it's our privilege to invite masters into studio and just chat to them about their skills journey, where they came from, how they got to where they are, and what it is that we can learn from those incredible journeys. And we're so excited to start this journey with you.
Yes, Emil, I must say, I am incredibly excited because of the guest that we have in studio today. Anton Smit is known to a lot of our listeners. You probably have seen his work at Menlyn Maine. And Anton actually just told me today there's 51 sculptures at that venue. So we are so proud and thankful for Anton to be here. I met him about 4 weeks ago, actually at the studio or the art studio in Bronkhorstspruit, which is an amazing space. So if you want to take your family on a trip, drive to their sculpture farm, it's amazing. So Anton, if you want to know more about Anton, just go read on the website because it is incredible to see where your work has gone. But Anton started actually as a 16-year-old winning a very profound gift, a profound prize. And that was a dream that started there, but it has grown to something amazing. And that's why we've asked Anton to come into studio today and just talk to our listeners and bring us into this journey of skill. Because we look at you now, Anton, and we're like, oh my goodness, have you seen that sculpture? But it started with a young man who had a dream. And so that's the question today is for us who are sitting maybe in your car or at home, you have a dream and you think, I might never get there. Today is the day we're having a discussion with Anton Smit. And so welcome in studio. We're so excited to have you and thank you for your time.
Thanks, Yanni and Emil. It's a wonderful privilege to be here. And I'd like to tell you the whole story. It probably will inspire young people that are now currently doubting whether they can actually make a living out of art. Because if I can make a living out of art, anybody can. Because my parents were very strict people. My mother was a teacher, my dad was a policeman, and they didn't tolerate anything like art and in our household. So I had to like dream what I wanted to do. So everything that I did was actually built on a dream because I was just like very hard-headed. My dad said, you have to become a policeman. And having grown up with a policeman, I already knew that's the last thing I wanted to do was to be a policeman. And so nevertheless, when I was in matric, I was 16 in matric, I entered a competition. It's actually the Bible Year competition. It was a countrywide competition for kids to do art. So I made this head of a hippie with lots of drugs and things, like showing what drugs can do to you. And I actually won the competition with all the little bags of plaster of Paris I bought at the chemist. And I just threw them together. I had no idea how to do it, what I was doing. But I had some idea of forming things with my fingers. So it was an enormous mess, you can imagine. And then I spray painted the thing gold afterwards. How they gave me the first prize, I'm just happy that they did. Because it sort of does give one a kick. Recognition is a big thing. Sure. And I did not get that from my parents, wow. Especially from my father. And so having got that sort of like background of winning the competition with my very first thing that I ever created, it encouraged me. So then I said, I have to read about this thing called art. So my dad did have books, you know, these Time Life books, these that you get like Encyclopedia Britannica. He had a set of them, and there was a guy in there called Michelangelo. And I thought, the Lord has sent an angel called Michael to come and show us how to carve these things, because there were these photographs of these exquisite sculptures carved out of white stone. I was thinking, no man can do that. It's just too difficult. It's impossible. It must have been an angel. So when I read further, I saw that this angel has a surname. His surname is Buonarroti. I said, no angel that I know of has a surname. And so I realized that he was a man. That was a pivotal moment in my juvenile brain at the time. I was thinking, a man did this. It's impossible. How can a man do that? But I'm also a man. Well, I'm going to be one soon. But I'm a human being, and he's a human being. So if he could do it, I'm going to do it. And that's all I needed in my life, is that firm conviction that this is what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I did it.
Yeah, I'm so excited by this discussion, Anton, because I can see the passion that it awakes in you. Even seeing, listeners, I wish you could see it, even telling the story, what happened with you, how many years ago, 40 years ago?
More
than that, how God opened something in your spirit to say, but you can also do this. I love that.
You know, there's actually a preamble to this story that's actually quite necessary, because you just mentioned the Lord. So how much of a part did the Lord play in this dream of mine, or in everything that I did? And there's a very peculiar story how it came about that the Lord came into my life. When I was a little kid, my parents never went to church. My mother, also, I even cry about my mother when I mention her name, because she said, there can be no God because my life is a hell.
Sure.
Yeah. So if there was a God, my life wouldn't have been the hell that I'm experiencing. And it was shocking. My dad was never at home, and he said to me, you look after your mother. So I was actually like looking after my mother in a way. But she was actually, when she was sober, she was marvelous, magnificent person. But then Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde comes in when she's busy with a bottle, then you better watch it, boy, because she's going to fling that bottle at you. It was very, very strange. I had no idea what was happening. Even now, recently, I'm unraveling the sequences of events and certain things that happened. But a very, very nice thing that my mother did was, one Sunday morning, she dressed me up in my best small white shirty, with my little sandals, with my kreisbande, what do you call them?
These suspenders.
Suspenders. And off, she says, she chucked me into the car, and off we go. And we go through town in Port Shepstone. And then there at the bottom of the town, there's this building with a point on the, oops, there goes my watch, sorry, with a point on the top, which was the Enkia Kerk. So she parks opposite the road, and she points to the front door, and she says to me, go in there. I said, what?
Sure.
Why must I do that? But if I'm going to do that, you got to come with me.
Yes.
She said, no way, she's not going to go in there. But you have to go, she says to me.
Sure.
And I tried arguing a little bit, but then I realized it's not going to help. I better go. So off I go into the church, and there are these wooden benches. They seem to be huge. And I shuffle in one, and I'm like leaning over the front bench. And the next minute, Batman appears. the Batman with his big cloak. And I'm saying to myself, wow, what, there's Batman. And he's going, ooh, ooh. That's all I remember. It was like, he's like, growling or something. But the next minute, the lady comes past there with a row of kids and says, come with us. Off we go around the back to a Sunday school. And there was this lovely lady who told us a story. Of course, kids love stories. So she told us the story about the Good Samaritan. And I listened. I was hanging on every word that she said. This guy was robbed. He was beaten. He was left for dead. And then the really cool guys came walking past, and the lawyers and the businessmen and whoever, and they didn't bother with this man beaten up, bleeding. And then he dressed this guy's wounds and took him to the innkeeper, who was the Holy Spirit, which I didn't know then. I just thought, wow, who is this guy? Jesus. First time I heard about Jesus, I said, this is it. This is it. I'm going to follow this Jesus for the rest of my life.
Sure.
So is that a conversion, I guess?
Yes. Hmm?
So when did you, what's the word? When did you come to?
Salvation.
To have salvation. So I was experiencing salvation when I was 5 years old. In fact, years later, Pastor Ed Rabin from Hatfield Church baptized me here at the tent down the road here.
Wow.
Where there was a big tent where there was thousands of people. All our friends and things used to go there. And I was baptized there, and I thought that was when I became a Christian.
Sure.
But then I actually, in my spare time, I did Bible study. I went to Bible study classes. And then I realized, one guy said, when do you become a Christian? The minute that you believe that the Lord Jesus is Lord, and He is the Son of God, and He is your Savior. The minute you believe that, you don't have to be baptized. You don't have to be anything. You have to believe that.
I mean, by faith alone.
And yeah, and so that, and then it was a little bit difficult growing up with that sort of thing dormant in a way in inside of me as a kid, because I couldn't talk to my mother about it. My father would send me to the loony bin if I told him about it, you know. And I don't really remember. It was a bit traumatic as a youngster at home. But then this event of winning this competition at school, and also of discovering Michelangelo in a book, and it blowing my mind, and me saying, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Fortunately, I had met Christ before, because I really needed him.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I really needed him.
Anton, what really kind of just inspires me about this conversation is, number one, the appreciating the fact that every single one of us, we come from a particular context, and that context has nuances and it has challenges. And like, we all go through life with a different experience and a different environment in which we grew up. But those things play into our spaces. But those things also form us and shape us to some extent. And all of that ultimately is something that you can harness towards this incredible gifting. But what I do wonder is that moment when you decided to engage in art at 16. I mean, you mentioned something in this conversation about your father wouldn't ever approve anything that had to do with art or any of those industries. But at which point was this passion birthed? So it was kind of awakened maybe when you discovered Michelangelo and when you expressed this activity. But what is it that led to that moment when you were 16-year-old and expressed that creation?
That's a very good question, because I don't really know, because it just happened spontaneously.
Wow.
You know, because before that, actually, I wanted to become a Mirage pilot.
Oh, really?
So somebody told me, if you've got fillings, you can't be a Mirage pilot, because as you go through the sound barrier, your fillings come jumping out of your mouth. It's a totally ridiculous story, but I believed it. And then they told me there's a thing called a flight plan. I said, a what? I said, no, not for me. I don't want a flight plan. I get in that plane and I just, I go. But unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. and you had to study a lot, etc. And I wasn't very keen on that. So I decided to do art. So, yeah, I actually enrolled at the Technikon in Pretoria. And when I had to pay the money, I had to go to my dad to say, can you give me money to go to art school? I said, no way. Sorry. So I had some savings that I paid the first amount out of my own money, but I didn't have enough to pay the fees for the year. So they actually took that money from me. I lost the deposit. And then I said, okay, now where am I now? What am I going to do now? I actually was married already at a very young age and had a baby. And I had to feed them. I had to look after them. But for me to feed people is just part of life for me. I take to it like a duck takes to water. So I had no fear really of not eating, because it's the Lord said in the Bible, look at the birds. They don't spin and toil, but I look after them, and you are worth much more. And I believe every word he says. So I'm worth much more than a little sparrow. So I'm not going to go hungry.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Anton, something that's so just if I think of, I walked on the premises there in at the studio, and the one picture that I remember, Rulene, your wife, she met one of the workers, and she's like, "So how's your hearing now?" Suddenly she was even speaking loudly to him, and suddenly you guys helped him, and he got some
hearing aids.
But like you're saying, God is looking after the sparrows, so He will look after you. And I can see that is also something that you really do that. The people really on your premises and the guys who work for you, they really, I'm like, they will see God because of what you're doing.
They are like our children, so you do get the occasional bad apple, but then they go. But the guys that are there are just like our children. My wife loves them; they love her. The madam just has to say anything, they jump. So we love it, but we're deviating now. So
so maybe I do want to explore one more thing, because in this episode, the one thing I do want to touch on is you've mentioned the influence that Michelangelo had on the way that you conceive of creative ability and potential. But what other sources of inspiration have you experienced in this journey towards mastery and where you are now?
So I realized that I knew nothing. I realized that I needed to go to be educated, and that wasn't going to be possible. So after leaving the police, I went and I worked at Greatermans, which is a big department store that was in Church Street at the time. I don't know if you people remember that. He remembers it, but Yanni doesn't remember it. But in that, they had like a restaurant inside. They had like everything that you could think of. And they had 18 windows on Church Street and down a little side street. And my job was to make sure that these windows were properly designed, and then they had lots of clothing and stuff, and then the window dressers would go and pin clothings on models. But I would say what the models should look like or how they were posed, etc. And it was a fantastic job, and I loved it.
That's fascinating.
It is.
Yeah. Window design. And there was a German magazine called Schaufenster at the time, and which what we prescribed to was, I mean, our department was right on top of the building in like a funny, like loft building that we worked in. And we did our own silk screening, our own painting, our own everything. And we had limited budget. So that helped the creative juices to flow. But it didn't help me to become a sculptor. So I had a bicycle at the time, in fact, a girl's bicycle, because I couldn't afford anything. And every lunchtime and every day after work, I'd go to the Central Library in Pretoria and go and sit there and study all the art books and read all the art books that I could find, because I realized that was the only way that I would be able to educate myself. And I do have an immense curiosity. I love to find things out, etc. So in the books, the one type of book that I particularly liked and read was anatomy. So what I would do is I would go lunchtime, and those thick anatomy books, you weren't allowed to take them out.
Okay.
You could only read them there. So what I'd do is I'd read the book, look at the pictures, etc., and write a little exam asking myself questions. What is the name of this muscle or that, whatever. Then I'd take that exam home, and I would answer the exam and take it to work tomorrow morning, because you can fool yourself. You can say, I know this thing, but you don't know it.
No.
You have to like imprint it in your head. And for many years, I did that. Later, I went to the Marensky Library, which is also not far from here, which is the University of Pretoria's library, and they had a bigger section. What do they call it? Research department, and many magazines from overseas, etc. I would devour the lot.
Wow.
I'd go there after work. That's when I had a little car. I'd go after work and say arrive there about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and stay till they close, which is 9 o'clock at night.
Incredible.
I was determined to know art history. And also the different styles of art, the different artists. And I remembered them, all of that kind of stuff, for a very, very long time in my life. And I did pass my own exams at anatomy.
That's incredible. We're looking forward to exploring this conversation further in the next episode. But the key takeaways for me, Yanni and Anton, have been, I love the way that you learned so much about sculpturing by staging mannequins in a department store, which is just so non-linear, and it's something that you would never think was relevant to developing a capability to just do the incredible work that you do today. But then I was also really inspired by the way that you used free resources. I think a lot of people, when they're in the beginning of their journey, they're like, I need to go get this expensive qualification. I need to go there, and I need to go overseas trip, and I need to go do all of this fancy stuff. And you're like, listen, what resources are available for free in my environment?
Use what you have.
Use what you have. And I think that's so empowering, because every single one of us can do that. But then you also identified really specific things that you said, listen, I need to understand anatomy. This is not just about art. Mm. And this is not just about how I represent, but also how what I'm representing and how I can do that accurately. And the fact that you were willing to effectively be self-taught. There's an ownership in that, Anton, that I think is so inspiring, to say, listen, I have this dream, I have this passion, I have this inspiration, and I want to get better at expressing that inspiration, and I don't have to wait. Mm-hmm. I can engage my own agency. I can have an internal locus of control and just really explore that.
Mm-hmm.
And you've really inspired me today just with this conversation. It's really, really incredible.
Yeah.
So, guys, stay tuned. Next week, we're going to be unpacking more of just Anton's incredible journey from this initial stirring and passion and inspirations to becoming the master that he is today. And we look forward to that discussion.